Anyway, I think we're on September the 5th, 1922. Is that okay? So the soul who lives in the will of God must enclose all creation within herself. My adorable Jesus comes to make himself seen with his heart pierced and embittered to the summit. It seems that all the pains of creatures were inflicted in that heart. In fact, it's not only sins that wound that heart, but also the sufferings that the creature causes herself by not corresponding with grace, which is very interesting. And it seems that since they were wounding a heart that loves, as they wounded that loving heart, its love is so great that it tried to transmute the very offences into graces and blessings. Wow. If you ever wanted a definition of the goodness of God, you have it there. O goodness of Jesus, he alone can boast of really loving the creatures and up to the incredible as well. So the pains of each one of them also pierced that sacred heart, but the offences were so many as to turn the very graces which came from that most holy heart into lightnings. So you can persevere with the rejection until it comes to a point where it will turn into chastisement. But initially he wants to turn it all into graces. So you can see, that's a very clear passage that I don't see anywhere else in these writings, where he first of all says that what comes to him he wants to give back as grace and blessing. But if you persevere and persevere and persevere, it'll come back to you in chastisement.
Is that what the lightnings mean?
Yeah. And so he changes my graces into lightnings and drives himself towards a general revolution. Now, this is 1922. The general revolution is the Second World War. So he is the human race. We're responsible for the chastisements that come. So he himself is plotting his own destruction. We even say that such and such a person is his own worst enemy. And has reached such a point as to deserve to be struck by me. And while he was saying this, he showed troubles everywhere, cities collapsed and evils of a new kind being shown. Okay. So afterwards, Jesus came back again, tired, asking for my help in his pains, Louisa said. And breathing on me again at the place in my heart, he shared with me the shadows, I would say, of his pains. That's all the human being can actually take. Yet even though they were shadows, had he not remained near me to give me help, I could not have endured them. What must be the pains of that most holy heart? Then calming himself, he told me, my daughter, firstborn of my will, since my will encloses everything, in giving you my will as life, I want to enclose everything also in you. Remember that a few months ago, you do remember, don't you? I fixed a little wheel of the sun inside of you. Now, do you have the reference for that in your book?
No,
it's February the 2nd, 1922, volume 13. February 2, 1922, volume 13. He fixed a little wheel inside of her. Okay. So I fixed a little wheel inside of you, and with the ruler I measured you all over. And then another little wheel descended from heaven. And after I fixed that one in you, it kept many threads of light which were fixed in the Most Holy Trinity. Everything remained open between you and us. And for that time, I left you without giving you any explanation of my work. He's now going to give the explanation here. If you don't close the door, it's going to affect the recording. Everything comes down to the recording, including echo. I left you without giving you any explanation about my work. Now, after having worked in you so much during all this time past and having to complete my work, that's Philippians 1:6, the Lord completes what he starts. I want to give you some explanations so that the seal of my will, you need a heading, the seal of the divine will on top of your page, because the seal is going to come up time and time again. Now, the seal of the divine will is desperately important if you remember the book of Revelation and that before the terrible chastisements of the earth, the elect were to be sealed. The elect were to be sealed so that the devastation wouldn't come upon them. And that's around chapter 7. And when you come into the reign of the Antichrist in chapter 13, then you have everybody who has not been sealed with the divine seal gets the seal of the Antichrist, and the human race is turned into two camps. Okay, so this seal of the divine will is extremely important. Okay. So that the seal of the divine will and of yours becoming one may give completion to the mission that I have called you. Now, again, you need a second heading at the top of your page, and that is the completion of Louise's mission, because we're going to get the explanation of that as we go along. And this is his first time he speaks about completing her mission. Okay. So, number one, the little wheel of light which I fixed inside of you was the whole of creation, which came out from the divinity, all love, light and beauty. And then I measured you with the ruler to see your dispositions and those which were lacking in order to put them in, to be able to fix the little wheel well and to keep it safe. So notice the Lord himself looks at whatever is missing. He will actually fix it up. So that's like a workman who's trying to do something and sees that, you know, something needs to be adjusted, and he just does it. So the second thing is, the second little wheel was the divinity which descended into you, established that which the divine will had created in heaven, and fixed it in you so as to place itself in the proper relations with that creation owed it. So the first little wheel is the whole of creation, and the second one is the divine will. And it's going to get these two wheels operating in relation to each other. Now, know that I have enclosed and fixed creation in you. So you better remember Romans 8, and I think it's 17. I'm not absolutely certain at this moment that the whole of creation is waiting for the sons of God to show themselves. I want that which was done in heaven to have life upon earth, but in our own will, which ascending to us again may bring it to us all love, full of light and beauty as we delivered it. So the divine will is in heaven, the divine will is on earth. And Jesus says he's now fixed creation inside of Louisa and the divine will also inside of her, so that she can give him back creation in the divine will, which is what he wants. Okay. And you can give it back to us all love, light and beautiful as we delivered it. So this is why I marked you with all the deaths and pains of each creature. That means each soul. You see, it's not each creature in the sense animals are creatures. OK, so it's us, it's humans. So souls, I think, is better there. And all souls together, that we would say from Adam to Zachary, so that I might find the whole of creation in you. And since heaven remains open between you and us, you will bring creation onto our lap as if it had been delivered to you. Now, he doesn't seem to be talking about creation as the stars and the galaxies, does he? He seems to be talking about the human race.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's saying to Louisa, since we put the divine will inside of you, we also put the human race inside of you, and we want you to bring them back to us as they were before the fall. Okay. So since heaven remains open between you and us, you will bring creation onto our lap as if it were delivered by you, that is, as a birth from our will made by you, which you bring back to our feet delivering it on our lap. Now, the language is very interesting because in the ancient world, the birth of an infant was onto the lap of the husband. One of the wonderful images that I have somewhere is a birth in Africa according to the ancient rules. And there was nobody in the hut except the husband and the wife. And she was in a kind of a semi-sitting position, standing. I don't know what you call that, crouching. And he was sitting with his legs under her, ready to receive the infant. It's the most beautiful image of oneness. And there was an extraordinary beauty about it and simplicity. See, the birth made into our lap, you know. So using very ancient language there, which I think is lovely. These are our rights that we claim. All we want is that which came out from us to enter into us. It's true that our will alone, acting in the soul, has, with its power, just as it acted in that void when we delivered creation, will be able to give us back our rights. In other words, only the divine will can do this. I mean, Louisa as an individual, or any one of us as an individual, couldn't do this. But the divine will acting in us can do it. Hence how important it is for us to open up to the fullness of the divine will. So, but we want to use this power so that we may not remain disappointed in the work of creation. And our love triumphs more in taking from one creature that which all should give us. So he has said this over and over again, that when he works, he works the entire process through one person, as our Blessed Mother in redemption and Louisa in the kingdom of the divine will. And once it's absolutely completed in them, then others can enter in as deeply as they want to go. Now, we are fixing everything in you, or I should say now we are fixing everything in you. Before, it was in the Blessed Mother. The other little births will be delivered, which loving to live in this way of the divine will bring into our lap, some of them 10, some of them 20, some of them 100 measures. Okay, do you remember the parable of the sower, Matthew 13? Some bring forth 50, 30, 60 or 100%. Now, these are us, the other little births, and we can respond at different levels. But the 100% is demanded of Louisa so that we can enter in as well as we can. You will be like a tree which has sunk its deep roots in our will. And these roots will make other saplings germinate, which surrounding the tree like a crown will produce its fruits. It's very interesting because Jesus is using the same imagery about himself in Matthew chapter 7. Matthew 7, 16 are the fruits. Matthew 13, 8 is the producing 10, 20 and 100-fold and so on. And Jesus had compared himself to a mustard seed that would become a great tree, didn't he? And he also compared himself to the vine. So he's using exactly the same language here. And that is because he himself is the vine and we are the branches. So he's working through one of his branches on the vine. True good never remains isolated, Jesus said. And since my will is the greatest good, its fecundity will be immense. Therefore, courage, be attentive in everything. It's true that our will do everything. I desire it, he does it. Okay. But the thread of your will must run together with the divine will and extend into heaven, on earth and in everything to let us accomplish what we want to operate in you. Okay. So this wonderful thing can only happen if the divine will is actually carrying it out. But we have to give him the space. We have to give him the kingdom inside of us. Is that all right? So September the 9th, 1922. In creating man, God formed a kingdom for himself. That's Luke. What is it now? Luke 17:21, the kingdom of God is within you. Okay. So, my ever-sweet Jesus continues to speak about his most holy will. He showed his heart opened, and from which many rivulets of light. Now, he himself is the light. John 8:12 and 9:5. I am the light of the world. John 8:12 and 9:5. So many rivulets of light came out, which wounded all souls and formed a net of light overwhelming everything. And he began to speak, telling me, my daughter, in creating the first man, I gave a start to the creation of mankind. And after I formed his body, with my omnipotent breath, I infused in him the soul, Genesis 2:7. And with another breath of mine, I could say I infused myself into the depths of man in order to sustain him, dominate him and keep him safe. So you'd put Genesis 1:27 there, made in his image. Okay. So that man formed a kingdom for me. Now, a kingdom is a space to work in. It's a place where somebody is going to reign, where an awful lot is going to be accomplished. But at the moment, I just want to think in terms of space, that I give him the space to do what he wants. So that man formed a kingdom for me. And I, as king, was to extend my boundaries. My joy reached the summit in seeing in this man the generation almost endless of other beings. They're all the creatures coming out of Adam. I saw the generation almost endless of many other beings that would provide me with many other kingdoms. For as many creatures as would come to the light, in whom I was to reign and to expand my divine boundaries. So you think of God creating all of these souls, and what he wanted was to be able to reign as king in every single one of them. Okay? And all the good of the other kingdoms was to flow for the glory and honour of the first kingdom, which is Adam. He's the first one made, isn't he? Which was to be the head of the others. He was constituted the head of the human race. And as though the prime act of creation. But as man withdrew from my will, my kingdom and his ended. Now notice, and his. Either God reigns or no one reigns. So if it isn't God, it's emptiness. And I'm sure you've looked into at least some people's eyes and seen that awful emptiness, mm-hmm. where there's absolutely nothing there. Not only this, but he trampled me and he placed himself to reign in my place, idolicizing himself. That's autolatry, the worship of self, and the final insult to God. Idolicizing himself and forming the reign of vices, miseries and disasters. My joy died at birth and turned into sorrow. Now, the one thing that the human race gave to God that he didn't have before was sorrow. Okay, that's our gift to God, sorrow. See, all evil was in his withdrawal from my will. So that's the creation, and now we've got to come to the recovery, which is redemption. Now, as we go on in these writings, the Lord is going to give us these explanations, but more and more expanded as we go along. Okay. So for redemption, I want to give you Hebrews 4:15. So I put A for creation and B for redemption. Our love did not stop because God is love, and naturally his nature doesn't change. I didn't want to be an isolated God, no. Therefore, I wanted to descend from heaven, taking on a humanity similar to the first man. Now, please put a note there, not degenerate man, similar to the first man before his fall, because he was in the divine will, wasn't he? Okay. I enclosed all of creation in this humanity. I bound the human will of this humanity to the divine will. So this is Christ talking about his own humanity. So that this human will, embracing all creation and all of their acts within the divine will, might bring it to my throne as triumphant over all human acts, which had been changed by it into acts of the divine will. Now, there you have the redoing of all acts and turning all acts into divine acts. With this, the human will took possession of the divine will, and the divine took possession of the human. Now, it happened in Jesus first and then in others afterwards, one lording over the other. In fact, when one being forms one single thing with another one, if one is Lord, the other too becomes Lord almost naturally, because it's mutual giving. The only reason for which I had commanded man to abstain from the fruit prohibited by me was this. This is very interesting now. This is an explanation of this bit of Genesis you won't get anywhere else. I wanted an act of sacrifice of his will in mine, so that through this sacrifice, binding his human will with mine, he might take possession of my will and I of his, and both might reign with the same power, that's the Father, wisdom, the Son, and goodness, the Holy Spirit. So to reign in Christ is Romans 5:17. So Adam was told that he was Lord of the earth and he could reign over everything, but he was supposed to do it in the divine will, not outside of it. In nothing I wanted him dissimilar from me. He was a birth from me. He was my son. Think of Luke 15. He was my son. And what father does not love his son, want his son to be rich and happy as he is? More so for me, the celestial father, who would lose nothing in rendering this son of mine rich, happy, and reigning with me. Okay. So, The Lord wanted all of this, so that's the Father of the Son. Now, the reason why I gave you Luke 15 is, you know, the Son is now prodigal, the prodigal Son. Okay. So, what was the thing that the Lord wanted to produce through redemption? It was to produce another Christ. So, as man broke his will from mine, my love did not remain quiet, but raised its flames higher. You see this very much in every detail of the crucifixion of Jesus when he's hanging on the cross. And Louisa describes it very well in the hours of the Passion, that every challenge thrown to Jesus, his love rose higher. His love rose higher. His love rose higher and higher until it reached the level that it could not be reached by any other human being. So he raised his flames higher. The flames now are flames of love. At any cost, I wanted to produce another me. So I chose my humanity, which sacrificing itself to my will in everything. Now notice the everything. The mistake we make is that we do it in some things. Took possession of my will, letting me accomplish within itself the purpose of the creation of man, which is to bring all things back to the Father in his will. In fact, my usual way is to carry out my greatest enterprises in one person alone, and then I diffuse them. Okay? It's good to write person there, in one person alone. Was it not one man, Adam, that ruined all my designs? And so my humanity alone, that is Christ, was to repay me for this ruin. Romans chapters 4 to 6. Paul gives you wonderful teaching on this. So was it not my humanity alone that was to repay me for this ruin? And the power of my will, enclosing all creation in it, was to return to me the loves, the kisses, the caresses, which the first man had so brutally rejected. Now, it's unrequited love that is being dealt with. One of the greatest martyrdoms on the planet, as you know. My love, laying down the garments, I would say, of sorrow and of mourning, clothed itself anew in feast, and triumphant, gave itself to the greatest excesses and follies of love. I want to give you John 10, 29 and 39. 29 and 39. So when I want to do a work with any human being, I always begin one on one. And if no, as if no one else existed. And then I extend it so much as to fill the heavens and the earth. Okay, so now we come to number three, which is sanctification. So creation, redemption, sanctification. Now, my daughter, my love wants to produce again. And while it gives in to excesses, it goes out taking a break. It wants to deliver new births. Taking a break was only 2,000 years, of course. It's nothing for him. And just as it operated in my humanity, enclosing all of creation in it, so that it might give to the Father everything he wanted from it, and let everything descend for the good of all people. So now, binding your will with mine, we're talking about Louisa, I want to enclose all of creation in you. And letting you take possession of my will, I want to feel my acts, my love, my pains being repeated in you. I want my reflector on earth. So a person on earth who actually reflects him. So I want to give you Wisdom 7:26. I want to give you 1 Corinthians 13:12. And he's going to continue talking about reflections. So 2 Corinthians 3:18. Because in 2 Corinthians 3:18, Paul says, you become like what you worship. The more you contemplate God, the more you're transformed into his image. So I want my reflector on the earth so that in looking at it, I may see in you as though in a mirror. That's your 1 Corinthians 13:12. The creation which I created in heaven and which my humanity enclosed within itself. And in reflecting myself in this mirror, I may recognize creation in you. We will be in continuous mutual reflections. Now, we use the same message, but not using those words. We say somebody becomes more and more Christ-like. That means a reflection of Christ on the earth. Okay, and the more we become that, the more he can work through us. Okay, so I will make creation be reflected in you and you in me. I from heaven and you from the earth. Then my love will be content. John 15:9. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Then my love will be content when I see in a human being not only the image of my humanity, but all that my divine will operated in it. He wants to see this miracle. Therefore, be attentive and follow my will. September the 11th, 1922. The primary purpose of all that God has done in creation and redemption is that the creature would live in the divine will. Okay. That was what he was at. So continue in my usual state, I was abandoning all of myself in the holy will of my sweet Jesus. And feeling the need to rest, I said to myself, also my sleep in your will. Hope you don't forget that one. I want nothing else but to take true rest in the arms of your volition. And Jesus said, daughter, lay your rest as a mantle over all creatures so as to cover them all, because only in my will is there true rest. Now, that mantle that you throw over everybody else will enable them somehow to come and sleep properly instead of sleeping in sin. Okay, I want to give you a couple of scriptures for rest. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 7 to chapter 4, verse 11. There's a big thing on rest there. Chapter 3, 7 to 4, 11. Okay, I want to give you Psalm 131. That's resting in the arms of the Lord. Okay, now there's lots more as well, but because that's a long teaching in Hebrews 3 to 4, I'll just give you that one. So Jesus says, only in my will is there true rest. And since the divine will envelops everything, and you rest in my divine will, you will lay yourself over all souls in order to impetrate true rest for them all. Matthew 11, 28, an invitation to come and rest in the Sacred Heart. How beautiful it is to see a creature of ours resting in the arms of our will. But in order to find true rest, it's necessary that she put all of her acts, her words, her love, her desires, etc., on the way within our will. That means fuse everything in the divine will. So that as they take their place in the divine will, they may receive rest and I may rest in them. Only when they are fulfilled, then do all works give rest. But if they're not fulfilled, they always give some concern, something to do, and renders a person true rest restless. Okay, so the subject here is huge. Absolutely huge. I'll just hint at it. Genesis 1, you have the seventh day was the day of rest after the labor of creation. Okay? Just put the seventh day. Then when you come to John's Gospel, there is a seven-day recreation account in John's Gospel. And what confuses people when you begin to show them this seven-day recreation account in John's Gospel is that day six is missing. Why is day six missing? Because that was the day man was created and he's already there. So you don't have to have another day. In fact, the whole of the Gospel is the recreation of the human race. All right? And the day that Jesus was buried was the most solemn Sabbath that there could be because it was Passover, okay? And it was his day of rest after the labor of redemption, okay? And the third one is that when souls come to truly rest in God, in the divine will, the Lord says he's home and dry. He rested after creation, he rested after redemption, and the final rest is when souls come to dwell in the divine will. Does that make sense? Now, you could go on a lot on that subject because, as you can see, I've given you Genesis to Revelation nearly. Okay, it's a huge subject. So the rest that's spoken about here then is called the Sabbath day rest. And the Sabbath day rest is you work for 6 days and you're supposed to rest on the seventh. And the seventh day rest is supposed to remind you of where you're going after the labors of your life. Because heaven is the Sabbath day rest. See how big the subject is. Yeah. So I'm only throwing it at you just in outlines, just to give you some idea of what is being touched on here. The seventh day rest. And when we speak of people who have passed over to the other side, we say, may they rest in peace. Well, that's their Sabbath day rest. Okay. So, as I say, there's an awful lot could be said about that, but I'm going to go on. So Jesus says, now, the fulfillment of the work of creation was that man, you'd say the purpose of the work of creation was that man would fulfill our will in everything. Because the word, first word, fulfillment, seems to be wrong there. The purpose of the work of creation was that man would fulfill our will in everything. Our will was to be the life, the food, and the crown of human beings. And since it's not yet so, the work of creation is not yet fulfilled. And neither can I rest in it, the Lord says. And neither can it rest in me. Now, that should be a small IT. Because it's creation resting in the Lord. Is that okay? It always gives me something to do, and I yearn for this fulfillment and rest. So this is why I love and want so much that the way of living in my will be known. Now, I want you to note every time he says he wants it to be known, because that's a subject we're going to have to look at. So I want my will to be known. Put a big marker around that. Nor will I ever be able to say that the works of creation and redemption are fulfilled if I do not have all the acts of the human being extending in my will. Now, just note what he's saying there. All the acts, not some. All the acts extending in my will like a bed to give me rest. And what beautiful rest shall I not give to the soul in seeing her coming back on the wings of our will. Isn't that lovely? With the seal of the fulfillment of creation. Now do you see seal again? Okay. I want you to note that one. Of the fulfillment of creation. My womb will be her bed. Now my womb means the heart of the Blessed Trinity. Okay. So you just put the heart of the Blessed Trinity there. Therefore, there is nothing that I did which did not have as its primary purpose that man would take possession of my will and I of his. This was my primary purpose in creation and the same in redemption. The sacraments I instituted, the many graces given by my saints, have been seeds, means to let man reach the possession of my will. Therefore, neglect nothing of what I want about my will, either with writing or with words or with works. Okay? That's because he wants it known. From this alone you can know that the living in my will is the greatest thing, the most important, that which interests me the most. You will know this from the many preparations that have preceded it as well. And you want to know where this seed of my will is sown? It's sown in Jesus' humanity. In it, in Jesus' humanity, it germinated, was born and grew. This seed can be seen in Jesus' wounds and in his blood, wanting to be transplanted into the human being so that the soul may take possession of the divine will, and Jesus said, and I of hers, so that the whole of creation may return to the origin from which it came. Now, that's where we're going, back to the beginning. Okay. So we have to pick up from where Adam left off. Just as it came out, not only through my humanity, but also through the creature herself. Now, in the next paragraph, he says, it's not going to be a few, there'll be an army of souls. Okay. Just as you look up into the heavens and you see an army of stars. Okay. You see an army of galaxies. Anything that God does, God is rich beyond riches. And so the number of galaxies we know of is 100 billion and counting. And the number of stars is beyond counting, because there's at least a billion stars in the Milky Way alone. There may even be more. Do you know what I mean? So the sheer immensity of what God does is beyond us. And so he says there will be his army of souls in the divine will as well. That's necessary to try and bring the rest of them around. Okay. But at the same time, they will be few, because it won't be everybody. Is that okay? And since he's talking to Louisa way ahead of the rest of us hearing about it, he said, even if there was only one, was it not one who, withdrawing from my will, disfigured and broke my plans and destroyed the purpose of creation? That's Adam, of course. One destroyed it. In the same way, only one can adorn it and fulfill its purpose. However, my works never remain isolated, so I will have the army of the souls who will live in my will. So he completes everything in Louisa, just as he completed everything in Blessed Mother for redemption. But he will have his army, just as he's had his army of saints from the church as well. So I will have the army of the souls who will live in my will, and in them I will have my creation restored. Isn't that wonderful? Now, if you want to look that up, I'm going to give you an exercise. You look up, do you know how to look up stuff in the Bible? You look up new heavens and new earth. Okay? New heavens and new earth. And you'll find there's an enormous amount of references to it in the New Testament. And I mean enormous. There'll be new heavens and new earth. So I will have my creation restored, all beautiful and striking, just as it came out of my hands. Otherwise, I would not have so much interest in making my will known. In other words, if this wasn't going to happen, what would be the point in all the effort? Okay. So September the 15th, 1922, you must give it a heading, Make Divine Will Known. And we're going to get more and more of this. Okay, make divine will known. Continuing to let copying be done from my writings of what Jesus has told me on the virtues, Louisa said, I was feeling such repugnance as to feel I was dying. And I said to myself, others have the inventory of their things done after their death. I'm the only one that has the hard lot of having to do it myself while I'm still alive. It's not fair. Okay. But of course, the others weren't involved in making a completely new revelation to the earth. And nobody else could do it. Ah, Lord, she said, give me the strength to make this sacrifice. And then, in addition to this, the confessor let me know the way that must be followed when they put them out. And she said, what pain. I felt embittered deep into the marrow of my bones. And blessed Jesus, on coming, seeing me so embittered, said to me, my daughter, what is it? Why do you afflict yourself so much? It is my glory, my honour that demands this. And you should be happy about it. Do you think that it is the human beings that want this, that do this? And that command you. No, no, he said, I have to overwhelm them all. I find that very interesting. I have to overwhelm everything. I have to push them. I have to enlighten them. And after all his overwhelming and pushing and enlightening and everything, when Louisa died, what did they do with her writings? Dump them in the Vatican is where they dump all the wonderful writings of the saints until somebody comes along that wants to rescue them. And it wasn't until 1994 that a group of priests and lay people actually went and rescued the writings of Louisa. But the Vatican wasn't concerned. It's fascinating. That's why the Lord says, I have to overwhelm everything. I have to push it. I've got to make it happen. Many times he said, I'm not listened to. Otherwise, I mean, look at Faustina's writings as well. They were dumped in the Vatican as well until John Paul came along and rescued them. Just to give two modern examples. Many times I'm not listened to, he said. Otherwise, they would hasten more and more and they would show more interest. And I'm forced to push them more strongly so that my will be accomplished. What is this thing in the modern church that is not interested in spiritual writings? You actually know the answer to it. It's the modernism, rationalism, and all of this liberalism and everything that took over. And these writings represent the way the Lord thinks, not the way the moderns think. So they weren't interested in this kind of writing. And they didn't realise that God was really speaking to them. That's the frightening bit. You would rather wait, Jesus said, until after your death, but my will doesn't want to wait. Besides, it's true that you have the link and the graft with my will, but here it's actually not about you, it's about me. In other words, it's about the divine will. It's about making known the effects, the qualities and the value contained in my will. Now, you need to put a marker beside that. What exactly are we telling people? It's the effects, the qualities, the value contained in the divine will operating in the creature so that she can actually live in it confidently. Okay. And then, if you do not want to interest yourself, Jesus said, you who know how much I care and how I ardently yearn for the effects of my will to be known, from which I will receive the complete glory of creation and the fulfillment of redemption itself. Oh, how many effects are still suspended, both in creation and redemption. Now, we're only in volume 14 and she's got to go to volume 36. Louisa still doesn't know the half of it. Do you know what I mean? He has so much more to actually reveal to her. Because my will is not known. That's the issue, okay? My will is not known and doesn't have its true kingdom in the human being, the human heart. And since it does not reign, the human will remains always the slave of itself. So if the divine will isn't revealed, then the human will doesn't even know that it's enslaved and doesn't know that it needs to be set free. Oh, how many things, or do you think that others will interest themselves after your death? Oh, how many things which I have manifested to souls are buried. That's buried in the bank of the Vatican. Okay, for lack of those who would interest themselves in my works. And probably, you know, if they ever do an overhaul of the 350 miles of shelves in the Vatican, that an awful lot of stuff will come up that they just simply dumped there. 350, you didn't know it so long, did you? Yeah, 350 miles of shelves. So there's a lot of places to bury stuff in the Vatican and just forget about them. For lack of those who would interest themselves in my work. But if I have tolerated this with other things, notice that. In other words, I let them off with it a few times. I will not tolerate it with my will. I will give so much grace to those who will put themselves to work and that they will not be able to resist me. But the most interesting and essential part, he said, will come from you. Now, I love the way he says the most interesting bit is to come from you. The rest of us, you see, are only trying to understand what was said to Louisa and to try and put it across. And no matter what we do, we can't match Louisa. You don't even try. Yeah. Okay. So September the 20th, 1922. This is Life in the Divine Will, if you want a heading. And a second heading is Selflessness. Selfishness doesn't fit in divine will. That's just the way it is. I was saying to my beloved Jesus, oh, please, my love, let it be so that nothing but love, praise, reparation and blessing towards you may come from all of my being. Now, while I was saying this, blessed Jesus came and I saw myself all eyes. There was not a particle in me that one could not see an eye. Now, it's very interesting because there's an image like this in the book of Revelation. You're told that the Lord had eyes all over the place. That means all seeingness. There was not a particle of me in which one could not see an eye. And from each of them, a ray of light came out which wounded the person of our Lord. And he said to me, my daughter, it's right and proper. The word in my book is decorous. It's right and proper for me and for you that nothing but love, sanctity, glory, all for me come out of you. Otherwise, I would degrade my will by letting a soul live in it who is not a complete complex of all the goods with which my will overbounds. Now, all those goods, you've met them before, wisdom, understanding, counsel, fortitude, knowledge, all the fruits of the Spirit and all the rest of it and all the sanctity and the divine will, everything that comes from the Lord. So you have to be a complex of all of this. And the thing that binds all of them together is love. He's told us that many times. And if the soul did not have the seeds of all the goods, she could not receive the goods which my will contains. So if she didn't have the divine will within her, she couldn't have all the goods that it contains either. And if, may it never be, she had some seed which is not good, that's Hebrews 12:14. Hebrews 12, nothing unholy or unworthy can enter the divine will. If she had some seed which was not good, she would be an intruder without nobility and decorum. Therefore, she herself, feeling ashamed, would go out of it, nor would she have any taste and contentment. That taste there is satisfaction and contentment, which keeping within herself things that are extraneous to my will. Okay, so he says that when we allow something in us which is not right for the divine will, do we ourselves pull out? We do it quite naturally. Just as the souls in purgatory pull quite naturally away from the divine presence when they can no longer, when they can not at that particular time endure the purity of God's gaze. So they agree to go back into the flames to be purified, to come back. And so they keep trying to come back. The more we pray for them, the more they try to come back. And then eventually they can enter into the presence of God. Okay. So there's no way that we can live in the divine will if there's anything contrary to the divine will in us. It's actually that simple. So this is why I have marked even the drops of your blood, your bones and your heartbeats. And the marks of the are these eyes of light, so that nothing may come from you which is not holy and not directed to me. So if he has given her eyes of light in everything, her blood, her bones and everything, that means he has given her complete self-knowledge. She can actually see. One of the greatest gifts God can give us is self-knowledge. That we can actually see the spots. We can see them very easily in others, but not in ourselves. And self-knowledge is a great gift from God. So then Louisa said, Jesus carried me outside of myself, letting me see how everything is all upset. That means in the political and social spheres in the world. Okay. Why is it all upset? Because it's outside of God's will. They're not even doing themselves a favor. And how they are plotting more wars and revolutions. Of course, that's the Second World War. So I want to give you Isaiah 46:10 that the Lord is revealing ahead of time. And Jesus did a great deal to persuade them, but seeing their obstinacy, he withdrew from them. Now, to withdraw the divine presence is the worst punishment of all. So I want to give you, I've given you this before, Ezekiel 10 and 11 and Romans chapter 1, where the Lord says that God abandoned them. He says it three times in chapter 1 of the Romans, since the foul way of life that was going on in Rome at the time didn't deserve God's presence. So he withdrew from them. Romans chapter 1 and Ezekiel chapters 10 and 11. Now, if God's presence is withdrawn from us, grace is withdrawn. Because Jesus has told us since volume 2 that he is grace. Okay? So it might be good to say grace is withdrawn. And if grace is withdrawn, of course, human beings kill each other. That's the awful thing. And she said, oh my God, what sad times. I believe that man has never reached such an excess of perfidy before now understood, wanting the destruction of his own being. And you see, that our problem is that our wars become more and more destructive. We have the ability now to destroy the planet, which we never had before. So in the final paragraph, Louisa is reminded that she has a double office. One is the office of being a victim soul, and the other is the office of being a daughter of the divine will. You see, when we started out in volume one, she was only called to be a victim soul. As you move on towards volumes 6 to 11, her mission is gradually changed into being a daughter of the divine will. So now she has the two offices, okay? So after this, Louisa said, I was in fear that my sweet Jesus wouldn't come. More so since I felt that my sufferings had become milder and were as though asleep. So I said to myself, if what I saw is true, according to the other times, in order to give course to justice, he probably will not come and will let me share his pains. At long last, she can work it out for herself. He's not coming because he wants to do justice. This is the first time in 14 volumes that Louisa comes to this conclusion. I thought, wow, I'm not the only one that's a slow learner. But it gives me comfort. I don't know about you. And Jesus coming back and seeing me very oppressed said, my daughter, don't fear. Don't you remember that you occupy a double office? One of victim, soul, you'd have to add, because victim has a new meaning for us. And the other, the greater one, is that of living in the divine will. To give me back the complete glory of all creation. Therefore, if you are not in one office together with me, I keep you in the other one. Now, this is funny. The relationship between Jesus and Louisa, I just think is fascinating. She has, after 14 volumes, come to the conclusion that was perfectly obvious to anybody reading it, that when he isn't coming, he's doing justice, okay? And now that she's come to that conclusion, he shifts her focus completely and says, well, actually, you know, it means that you've shifted from one vocation to the other. It's fascinating. So if you're not in the office of victim, you're in the office of living in the divine will. And as, of course, we go into the highest volumes, it's totally in the divine will. She's actually left the victim thing behind. Therefore, if you are not in one office together with me, I keep you in the other one. At most, there might be a pause of sufferings with regard to the office of victim. Therefore, do not fear and calm yourself. He has to tell her that all the time because she's an Italian and the Italians are very emotional. And calming themselves is not exactly a natural gift for them. I don't know if you know them. So... September the 24th, 1922. I'm going to give you my own heading for this. Evil comes from the rejection of divine will. This is the heading for this whole piece. So evil comes from the rejection of divine will. As I was in my usual state, Louisa said, my sweet Jesus made himself seen stripped, shivering with cold, telling me, my daughter, cover me, warm me, for I am cold. See, with sin, the creature had stripped herself of all goods. Genesis 3, 7 and 11, where Adam and Eve discovered they were naked. And the Lord said, who told you you were naked? Where'd you get this knowledge from? So Genesis 3, 7 to 11. I also want to give you a very interesting text in Revelation 16:16. And I always connect these two, Genesis 3 and Revelation 16, because John says something that if you take it by itself will leave you just saying, what on earth is he talking about? He says that when Jesus comes, make sure you have your clothes on. And so you could misread it, and that John is saying, now no streaking, please, you know. Whereas clothes means your garment of salvation, the garment of grace. Stripped means no garment of salvation, no garment of grace. Is that okay? That's what it means. And that's what you mean by stripped of all goods. And Jesus is going to explain that that's why he accepted the stripping in the passion to make reparation for this. So with sin, the creature had stripped herself of all goods. And I wanted to form for her a more beautiful garment, weaving it with my works, beading it with my blood, and adorning it with my wounds. This is the garment of salvation. And that's the meaning of the white cloth, of course, that we put on an infant in baptism. But what is not my sorrow in seeing this garment so beautiful being rejected, as creatures content themselves with remaining naked? And it starts with parents not having the understanding to baptize their children. And I myself feel stripped in them, because grace is an outpouring of God. And so if the grace is not there, then the Lord feels stripped in these people. And I feel their cold. Therefore, clothe me, he said, for I need it. Louisa said, how can I clothe you? I don't have anything. And he said, indeed, you can clothe me. You have my whole will in your power. Absorb the divine will within you. That's your fusing. And then release it. And you will make me the most beautiful garment. Isn't that fantastic? That you, first of all, fuse in the divine will. But then you've got to use it to help everybody else. You will make the most beautiful garment of heaven and divine. And how warmed I will be, and I will clothe you with the garment of my will. Isn't that a wonderful thing? You could pray for the nation that's gone into the ways of sin. Lord, clothe them with the garment of grace. Clothe them again with the garment of salvation, but enter into the divine will first. It's only as you go over these texts more and more and more that you sort of come to grips with how to use it. Because I think Ireland needs the garment of grace and salvation very badly, doesn't it? So I will clothe you with the garment of my will, so that we may be clothed with the same uniform. That's the divine will. Okay? And it's only when we're wearing the uniform of the divine will that we can clothe others with grace. So this is why I want it from you, so that I may give it to you with justice. If you clothe me, it's just that I clothe you, to repay you for what you've done for me. All the evil in man is that he has lost the seed of my will. Therefore, he does nothing but cover himself with the greatest crimes, which degrade him and make him act like a madman. Now, that's a very important word. We would say a fool, wouldn't we? Okay. Don't forget that Jesus was declared a madman by Herod in the Passion. And he accepted that to heal our madness. Okay? So just say Herod in the Passion. Okay. Oh, how many follies they are about to commit. And this is a just penalty, since they want to have their own self as God. That's autolatry, A-U-T-O-L-A-T-R-Y. The final insult to God is autolatry, A-U-T-O-L-A-T-R-Y. So we come to September the 27th, 1922, and the subject here is love. I'm giving you these headings so that when you start doing research looking for titles, you'll see the title on top of your thing. Is that okay? Notice I said you. Okay, you heard that one. I felt embittered to the summit, Louisa said, of the privation of my sweet Jesus. And the pain was so great that I began to speak nonsense, to the point of saying that he didn't love me. That is nonsense, isn't it? That he no longer cared about me and that I loved him more. Of which he goes on with that, I just am fascinated. It's true that my love is small, just a shadow, a tiny little drop, a small scent. But this is because my being is made this way. Now, look at the way she's able to throw it back at him. But who can say all the nonsense I was speaking? It was the delirium of the fever produced by his privation that made me say silly things. That delirium is Psalm 62. Even my body pines for you like a dry, weary land without water. And Psalm 42, I have nothing but tears for my bread night and day. Psalm 62 and Psalm 42. Then after I struggled very much, my sweet Jesus came and told me, my daughter, I want to see whether you love me more. He says, I'm going to take you on, ma'am. And as he was saying this, the person of Jesus multiplied so much so that I saw him on the right, on the left, in the heart. There was no part of me or place in which I couldn't see him. And all together were saying, I love you, I love you, I love you. But this was nothing. Since Jesus contains the creative power, the whole of creation was repeating together, I love you, I love you, I love you. Heaven and earth, pilgrim and blessed souls, all together in chorus, as if in one echo, repeated the I love you, with that love with which Jesus loves you. So all creation. Now, I call this the rounds backways. Because we do this to the Lord. And here's Jesus doing it to Louisa. Why? Because the divine will is inside her. So Louisa said, I remain confused in the face of so much love. And Jesus added, say it, repeat that you love me more, multiply yourself so that you can give me as much love as I can give you. And Louisa said, my Jesus, forgive me. I don't know how to multiply myself. I do not possess the creative power, so I have nothing in my power. How can I give you as much love as you give to me? I too know that my love is a shadow compared to yours, but the pain of your privation makes me delirious, makes me say silly things. Therefore, don't leave me alone without you anymore if you don't want me to speak nonsense. And Jesus, interrupting me, said, ah, my daughter, you do not know in what a struggle I find myself. My love pushes me to the point of using violence to make myself come to you, while my justice almost forbids me, because human beings are about to reach the excesses of evil and do not deserve mercy. Now, of course, if Louisa had had any idea of what would have gone on in the concentration camps, she might have agreed to justice. Okay. The excesses of evil, and do not deserve mercy, which overflows upon them when I come to let you share in my pain. So there's your Isaiah 46:10 again. Which they themselves inflict on me. You must know that the leaders of the nations are conspiring together to destroy people and to plot troubles against my church. And to obtain the intent, they want to use the help of foreign powers. The point in which the world finds itself is terrible, and therefore have patience. So she's shown the preparations for World War II. Okay. And the interesting thing is that when they get to the stage of World War II, Jesus will say to her, no more about that now. We're not going to even deal with it. Let them kill one another as much as they like. You and I are going to create a future full of hope for them. It's beautiful, and they concentrate completely on the divine will. It's magnificent. So all these prophecies about chastisements and everything, it's all ahead of time. That's why I give you Isaiah 46:10 and Amos 3:7. October the 3rd, 1922, is all about Blessed Mother, which is nice. So this is a relief after chastisements. Continue in my usual state, I felt oppressed, because Blessed Jesus often allows that I suffer while the confessor is present. Now, this is the first time she says this. It seemed in the volumes before now that Louisa was suffering privately and that the priest would come the following morning and release her. But now she's saying that she's taken into the sufferings with the priest actually present. And I lamented to Jesus, saying, my love, I pray you, I implore you, do not again allow that I suffer in the presence of anyone. Let everything pass between you and me, and that you alone are aware of my pains. Oh, please make me content. Give me your word that you will not do it anymore. Even more, make me suffer twice as much. I'm happy as long as everything is hidden between you and me. That's okay for if it's just something involving herself, but this is involving a major revelation to the world, so it has got to be made known. So Jesus, interrupting me, said, my daughter, Do not lose heart. When my will wants it, you must surrender. In other words, the priest has to see what's going on. Besides, this is nothing other than a step of my life. My very hidden life, my interior pains, and everything I did always had at least one or two spectators. Now, one would be Blessed Mother, and two would, you'd be adding Saint Joseph. Okay. And this with reason, out of necessity, and in order to obtain the purpose of my pains themselves. The first spectator was my celestial father, okay, from whom nothing could escape. And since he himself was the one who inflicted those pains on me, he was the actor, that's the doer, and the spectator. If my father had seen and known nothing, how could I have satisfied him and given him glory? How could I bend him to mercy for mankind in the sight of my pains? Their purpose would have failed. Secondly, my mother was the spectator of all my pains of my hidden life, and this was necessary. Having come from heaven to earth to suffer, not for myself, but for the good of others, I had to have at least one creature in whom I was to place that good which my pains contained, and therefore move my dear mother to thank me, praise me, love me, and bless me, letting her admire the excess of my goodness. So much so that captured, enraptured, and moved at the sight of my pains, she prayed me that in the face of the great good which my pains brought to her, that I would not exempt her from being identified with my own pains in order to suffer them to repay me and to be my perfect imitator. If my mother had seen nothing, I would not have had my first imitator, not a thank you or praise. My pains and the good they contained would have remained without effect, because since no one would have known them, I could have not taken the first prop. I could not have made the first prop. And the purpose of the great good which the creature was to receive would have been lost. See how necessary it was that at least one creature be aware of my pains. Now, he doesn't mention Saint Joseph, but Saint Joseph had to have seen them. Okay. And the reason why he's isolating Blessed Mother as distinct from Joseph is that she was the one through whom the whole of redemption came. So she had a primary purpose in it, just as Louisa has with the Kingdom of the Divine Will. If for me it was so, I want it to be also for you. In other words, he's been telling Louisa from the beginning of these writings that she is the repeater of his life. Even more, I tell you that I want the confessor acting together with me, both as spectator and depository of the pains I make you suffer, so that he too may share in their good. And having him with me, I may excite him more in the faith and infuse in him light and love to make him understand the truths I keep manifesting to you. So what Jesus is saying is the priest is not there as a spectator. He's part of this mystery. And the more he enters into it, the more he himself will benefit as well. We've loads of evidence of that in the church with the what I call the saintly couples, you know, who worked with each other. Like Catherine of Siena and her spiritual direction. Pinafort, I think his name is. Raymond of Pinafort, I think his name is. And he became a blessed. I don't know why they didn't finish it off and canonize him, you know. Because if you're in heaven, you're in heaven. And you've got many of these throughout history, that the person who would be involved in helping the saint also becomes a saint. Okay. And you know, there's a saying in the church that to live with the saint, you have to be a martyr. So you're going to be a saint one way or the other. So if you're looking after somebody who needs an enormous amount of help, you've entered into martyrdom. Okay. And actually, if you look if you look at it as martyrdom, it actually helps so that you're not staying outside of the mystery. Okay, so we'll just finish this and then we'll stop. Louisa said, on hearing this, I remained oppressed more than ever. And while I hoped for mercy, I found justice and unshakability. Now, I don't know where these guys get the words. Would you put immutability? God is immutable. He doesn't change. I found this immutability on the part of Jesus. Oh God, what pain, she said. In seeing me more afflicted, he added, my daughter, is this the love you have for me? Oh. You remember she was saying that she loved him more? The times are so very sad, and the troubles which are coming are too horrifying. And when you are not able to prevent the whole course of my justice by yourself, the two of you will be able to do it. The two of you is the priest and yourself. That's very important. Maria Valtorta had her priest as well, Father Milignori. Okay. The two of you will be able to do it. And you yourself should ask me to make you suffer. Now, Louisa has avoided that all the time. She used to say, no, if obedience tells me, I'll do it. You know, so the priest has to do it. And Jesus says, why can't you do it yourself? In other words, why don't you take the initiative? You yourself should ask me to suffer. Therefore, resign yourself also in this and have patience. Your Jesus wants it, and that's enough. So I want to give you Matthew 18, 19 to 20, where two or three are gathered in my name. I am there. And if two of you agree concerning any matter, I will ratify it in heaven. So he wants the two. The Lord likes producing saints in clusters. Matthew 18, verses 19 to 20. Now I'll leave it there because the next one is very long.